Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. This is episode 440 on the 20th of July 2022. I'm your host Harry, joined today by Connor.
Good afternoon.
Hello, and today we're going to be talking about the fact that sadly none of the Conservative candidates for PM are any good whatsoever, especially now that Kemi's been knocked out, and also the squad getting fake cuffed and arrested while protesting on behalf of murdering babies. And before we go any further, I'll just point out that we've got a premium live hangout going on later on today at 3:30, covering the part two of Carl and Callum's look into our cyberpunk dystopia that we are currently living in. So if you're a premium member, you can check that out. If you're interested and you're not premium, maybe consider signing up and you'll be able to see all of the fantastic content we've got on the website. Without any further ado, though, let's get into the news.
So speaking of the architects of our cyberpunk dystopia, let's talk about how every single one of the Conservative candidates is bloody useless. So, if you would like a articulation as to exactly why all of the conservative candidates aren't particularly conservative, you can check out our book club on Edmund Burke's Reflections on the Revolution in France. He speaks about how every man's private stock of reason is limited and therefore allows him to fall back on his prejudices, the traditions of history that he's inherited from his forefathers. It's a doctrine of gratitude. I think a lot of the conservatives would do well to actually read this and bother listening to the forefather of conservatism. But unfortunately, many of them haven't, so you should instead and tell them exactly what's wrong with
it. And I imagine they would probably tell you that they have read it.
I believe Kemi Badenoch actually cited him in one of her speeches.
Oh, really? That's impressive.
It is impressive.
However, literate members of the Conservative Party, I'm very impressed.
You say that, but I'm going to be a correction for the office simping on Kemi today.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because I do have to set the record. I am very disappointed by the sort of fanboying by her because they think she's our girl. Unfortunately, she may also be ideologically captured. So, the Conservative Leadership Contest has whittled down its members to about two people this week. We're going to have another round of voting today. The results are going to be announced at 3 o'clock and someone will be knocked out. On Monday, Tom Tugendhat was destroyed. On Tuesday, Kemi Badenoch was removed from the race, much to the disdain of a lot of Tory Party core members who, according to Conservative home polls, wanted her to be their Prime Minister. There's very much a split between the Tory Party apparatchiks and the grassroots on where to go. The Tory Party apparatchiks are looking at electoral viability, who's got the biggest name recognition, they believe, is Rishi Sunak, whereas a lot of the Conservative base, including some people around the office, believe that Kemi Badenoch was the best bet because she was the most anti-woke.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, what little I know about each of the candidates individually was that Kemi seemed, from what I've seen, and what I've seen may have just been sort of choice excerpts, was that she, like you say, was the least woke of everybody. As far as I could tell, she was the best of a bad bunch. But that just goes to show the terrible position the Conservatives have left us all in, sadly.
Well, that was the way that Peter Hitchens articulated it. When asked on his favourite candidate, he said, it's like picking your own form of execution, and Kemi Badenoch seemed to be the least painful. I don't wish to blackpill everyone. Hopefully this can be a jumping-off point for pressuring your politicians to remoralise themselves and refashion themselves in the form of Conservatives. But at the moment, we don't have very many viable options, and as things get whittling down, they're looking worse and worse. It does feel like only yesterday when Boris Johnson won his massive 2019 electoral landslide victory. I actually remember sitting in a pub in Canterbury. We were the only Conservative table in the room. The pub had been hired out, unknown by us, by the Labour and Marxist societies, and they did a countdown to the exit poll.
There's some redundancy there, Labour and Marxist. You can just throw one of them out there.
Exactly why they were all sitting at the same tables, and with the student union as well. So everyone was in a very optimistic atmosphere. I remember one particular academic at this point, they're conflated, told me in November, we're on the cusp of a Labour victory in the UK and on the cusp of a Sanders victory in the United States. Obviously, those predictions didn't turn out all that well.
What was he smoking?
Well, he was the person who ran the Marxist Theory and Practice module for his...
So something very strong.
Yes, and then he became the head of school. Shocking at the persecution that I received while I was at university. But those societies decided to do a countdown to the exit poll. And when it got to one and the Conservative stonking majority came out on the screens, we were the only table that cheered. Within 20 minutes, we'd all football chanted them out of the pub. And then when the local Labour MP, Rosie Duffield, who was elected to Canterbury, came in expecting a round of applause from her supporters that had packed out the pub. Instead, she got us chanting old Jeremy Corbyn back at her until she left.
Oh,
great evening. Really don't like that woman.
Still, sadly, in retrospect, sadly, a little bit of a preemptive celebration on your part.
It was a bittersweet victory. We thought we were getting basically Bernie v. Trump, and instead we got Biden v. Bernie. We got Biden, And that's exactly how Boris Johnson's premiership has ended up. During today's, during Monday's confidence motion, Boris spoke mainly about how his COVID record was stellar, his record on Ukraine, how Labour were not willing to tackle online harms. So,
come on, guys, I'm basically a socialist. I'm doing great.
Yeah, why aren't you unhappy with how the rate of sabotage the country? He also said that COVID had unknown origins, but mentioned a bat or a pangolin rather than the Wuhan lab being the origin of the virus. So still pandering to Chinese interests, weirdly enough. He also just concluded his final PMQs, which is a massive self-aggrandizing session where a bunch of MPs were kissing his backside, and then everyone on the Labour benches were saying, and Lib Dems saying, we need a general election now. I fear the results.
I mean,
of that
obviously,
particular
thing. I mean, you might as well not have anybody there because everything that's going on there. Oh, the Conservatives are kissing backside, as you would expect. Opposition being opposition. Okay, so what's even the point of televising this right now?
It's entirely performative. And it's funny you said, why do we even have people there? Because we shouldn't be surprised that Boris Johnson's record wasn't all that. If we go to the next link, archived on his website is an article on global population control. I know, I can see your face. Not many people know about this. I'll read a quick paragraph from this. And strangely enough, it's worded in a way where you can agree with the premises and never the conclusions. But the conclusions are something that Boris Johnson is pushing, whereas the premises has been artificially inflated. So, he said, it is time we had a grow-up conversation about the optimum quantity of human beings in the country and on this planet. The planet part is what concerns me. Do we want the southeast of Britain, already the most densely populated major country in Europe, to resemble a giant suburbia? Interesting that we've already spoken about how immigration is turning the country into Megacity One. But Boris, unfortunately, you were responsible for a million people coming in last year of net migration, not to mention the small boats. So perhaps I would suggest, even if it's incompetence or perhaps deliberate malfeasance, you don't engineer a societal collapse by concentrating the population in one small sphere and then suggesting really insane and dangerous eugenicist population control measures as its only solution.
I also really despise the framing just immediately. It's time we had a grown-up discussion. And tell me, Boris, what exactly is the grown-up position? Oh, it's the one you already agree with, isn't it?
Yeah.
Funny how these things go.
It's almost strange how every single grown-up position in international institutions comes down to misanthropic population control. But speaking of people who are obsessed with population control, we see that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree in that Stanley Johnson also produced articles for Conservative Home talking about why Britain needs a population control policy, and also produced a book on Amazon, if you can see next, which I don't think many people are going to be reading once we get rid of the cookies thing. There we go. World Populations, the United Nations, Challenge and Response. Reminder, he did work for the EU and the World Bank, so he was very interested in limiting populations.
Yeah, it does always amuse me that leftists seem to think of the Conservative Party as ontologically evil. And the thing is, for the most part, sadly, they're right. But for all of the wrong reasons.
In the wrong direction. Someone today actually got up, it was one of the Irish MPs, and she said, the Conservative Party has emboldened the far right. And I was thinking, oh, God, if only. Instead, they're talking about population control and having leftist climate narratives, which is miserable. We went to COP26, and actually, Stanley Johnson was hosting.
Oh, did you see little Amal at COP26?
I wasn't in that hall.
Oh.
We were at a fringe event where Stanley Johnson hosted a panel on climate solutions and waffled on and on, and he concluded the panel, not allowing anyone else to chime in. The final word was, and if we really care about climate solutions, we have to have a grown-up conversation about population control.
Oh. Oh my God, I actually mentioned in the office the other day, I've been listening. People know that I'm into heavy metal, and I was listening to Cradle of Filth's most recent album from last year, Cradle of Filth being a British-based black metal band. Normally those guys sing about Satan, disgusting ritual orgies, and all that sort of stuff that makes you throw up the horns and go, yes, this is disgusting and cool, whatever. But there was one song called Suffer Our Dominion that opened with a little excerpt of a speech where somebody was saying, oh, the climate's going to destroy us all, and if we don't have voluntary population control, it's like, this is the least metal thing I've ever heard. At least change it so it says involuntary population control. At least that sounds a little bit more heavy metal and rebellious, but this is just, let's all of the heavy metal establishment just throwing their hands up and going, we support the establishment, yes, we are rebels. What do you mean?
Well, Boris is about to get a lot more free time considering he's out of a job, so I suppose he's setting himself up for a new one.
Maybe you should join Cradle of Filth.
Yeah, well, it would sound better than Carrie shrieking at home. But as we can see from the Conservative Homes reporting on this, the leadership race has now narrowed. Rishi Sunak has 118 votes. He's up three. He's just one away from the magical 119 number that cements his place in the final two. Penny Mordaunt is up 10 votes. She actually lost one vote because Tobias Elwood, he had the whip withdrawn from him because he didn't show up to Monday's confidence motion because he just decided to complain about Boris Johnson not wanting to rejoin the EU. Liz Truss has gone up 15 votes, so Penny Mordaunt's still ahead of her, but it's actually suspected that Kemi Badenoch, who was knocked out yesterday, a lot of her voters will go over to Liz Truss because the two work together. Kemi seems, by at least her verbiage in the debates, to stand against Penny Mordaunt's pro-trans opinions. So it would be surprising if Penny Mordaunt made it through to the next round. But we're still going to cover her misgivings today anyway.
And I think as we're speaking right now, will they be casting votes for the next round?
Yes.
And we'll find out tomorrow.
It's announced at 3 o'clock.
It's announced at 3 o'clock, yes. And then the campaigns over summer will be going on from that point onwards for the last two.
Yeah, so you can switch over to a number of various sources by the conclusion of this podcast and see it live announced on things like YouTube. So, just skipping past the Guido Fawkes link next, because it's basically just an infographic of where the standings are. Looking at who was knocked out on Monday, let's look at Tom Tugendhat. We're not going to be crying over spilt milk because he attended the Bilderberg meeting last month with Ida Auken, funnily enough, the author of You Will Own Nothing and You Will Be Happy.
Oh, fantastic.
He also attended with David Lammy and Michael Gove. So there's a sort of uniparty measure here to back warmongers who want to divvy the profits up among themselves.
I think the best analogy I've heard for all of this is they're all cheeks of the same arse.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly about right. Speaking of that, I saw that someone say that tweet earlier because there was a picture of them all having World Economic Forum profiles for the final three. But funnily enough, Tom Tugendhat's Economic Forum profile seems to have been scrubbed somewhat.
Very interesting. I don't know if you're going to bring this up, Kemi Badenoch, I think, is related, or her husband is also related to the World Economic Forum as well.
That will be later, because one else has mentioned this, and some people have been excusing it away. Also, this has happened for a lot of other MPs, because, again, nobody's mentioning this. Steve Baker had a World Economic Forum profile. Nobody seems to bring that up. Nobody's questioned him on it. It's gone. It's been archived here. I archived this. But nobody's quizzed him on it yet. So, again, thinking there are guys, that he's some libertarian hero.
There's no good establishment English libertarians, nope. As far as I'm concerned.
Even Desmond Swain's thrown his weight behind Rishi Sunak yesterday. I know.
How disappointing.
So, speaking of people that are going to be disappointments, did we dodge a bullet with Kemi Badenoch? Now, Kemi, in this interview Tom Newton Dunn on Talk TV, said she would have actually scrapped net zero commitments if it would have bankrupted the nation. So,
which it will.
It will, yeah. And she said none of us politicians will be here to be held accountable for it, so the target's kind of arbitrary, which I really liked the sound of. And then I did some digging into her background, because, of course, you have to with politicians. Her husband, Hamish Badenoch, as The Sun reports with this dreadful photo with Theresa May, is the global head future of work and real estate transformation at Deutsche Bank. You know the bank that deplatformed President Trump? Yeah, he was on the executive board of that.
Also,
for a long time.
With all of the problems that we're facing in England right now as well, connections to somebody in a deep connections to somebody in a bank who's head of a real estate transformation.
The exact kind of architect of You Will Own Nothing and You Will Be Happy.
Yes.
He's basically emptying out office spaces to make things more work from home. I believe he set the target 30%. So that means there's going to be a hell of a lot more places opened up to become high-rise one-bedroom renting apartments. If you don't do anything about the immigration, then you've got all those occupants. The status quo of housing, where we can't actually afford a home but have to rent endlessly, stays the same. Deutsche Bank also deplatformed President Trump, as I mentioned, after the January 6th insurrection, the worst thing to happen to American democracy since Nancy Pelosi became a congresswoman. Deutsche Bank also displays its ESG action on its website. If you'd like to know more about ESGs, there will be a link in the description to my article on it for lotuseasons.com. But basically, it's a set of woke criteria that acts as a insurance mechanism against the principle of get woke, go broke, that keeps businesses accountable to consumers that don't like their public actions. And it's partnered with the World Economic Forum because it's their vision of stakeholder capitalism. A bunch of hedge funds and banks prop up businesses to take climate conscious or socially conscious activities that aren't necessarily profitable now, but will create the new utopia where you will own nothing and you will be
happy. Well, I mean, one of the primary culprits behind ESG scores is, of course, the gigantic hedge fund company BlackRock, yep, whose head Larry Fink is on the board of the World Economic Forum. There's also Vanguard. I've looked less into them, but I wouldn't be surprised if their head is also deep in with the World Economic Forum.
Well,
also,
they're deep in with wokery because they were sponsoring family drag events recently. The Post Millennial were reporting on this. Yes, I know. Hedge fund capital destroying the concept of sexuality.
Family drag events.
Wonderful. Hamish also has participated in panels calling for equitable employee experiences with this company here. There was a link to a tweet that brought me to this website. And again, they're just putting loads of stuff on ESGs on this website, so not to be trusted. Hamish also worked at Barclays, according to his own LinkedIn profile. And I've documented how they've been ideologically captured too by the World Economic Forum in my article. If you'll see in the next tab here, it was on page 12 of this document, Blueprint for a Digital Identity. As you can see, Barclays were on board with creating digital IDs, corporate identities, incorporated with digital currencies for tracking every single person's consumers, businesses, etc., in concordance with ESG scores. Deutsche Bank's also there.
Now, Connor, remind me, which of the potential leaders of the country going forwards was it who was talking rather enthusiastically last year about the potential of introducing central bank digital currencies, which definitely aren't the first step in a massively slippery slope to social credit scores?
It would be Rishi Sunak, and we're going to cover that very shortly, because he is a nightmare on two legs. So speaking of WEF sycophants, let's divert to Penny Mordaunt, shall we? And get rid of that iNewspaper subscription thing. Penny Mordaunt supports BLM. That's wonderful.
Oh, very conservative.
She originally supported
her.
Jeremy Hunt, the Chinese lockdown fanatic, in his 2019 leadership race against Boris Johnson. And then during the Euros of 2020, she backed people kneeling on the pitch for BLM. She even went as far as to say BLM, in her book, have drawn vital attention to issues of systemic racism and inequality.
But she is excellent at belly flopping.
Yes. Well, when you got belly like that, I suppose. Mordaunt also says trans women are women. As the infamous clip says, in a 2021 Westminster debate, she declared that trans men are men, trans women are women. The comment came during discussion of the ministerial and other maternity allowances bill after the House of Lords forced an amendment to replace pregnant people in the bill with expectant mothers. And Mordaunt is often the one who's the pregnant people substitution is laid at her feet. Actually, Suella Braverman, in an interview with Dan Wootten last night on GB News, said that she was personally offended by Penny Mordaunt trying to keep this in because she was pregnant at the time. So
I think that would be a little bit upsetting, wouldn't it? The fact that it's kind of depersonalizing and dehumanizing you as a pregnant person rather than woman.
She might have all just called them vessels.
Yeah, good
tweet
point.
Then came out about how she understands womanhood, and she continued to not define what a woman is. Again, the bar for our politics is staggeringly low.
Once again, from the perspective, the foundations that these people are working off, somebody like Penny Mordaunt, she has completely accepted the leftist interpretation of womanhood and manhood as basically being a purely social aesthetic.
It's an assumed, politically prescribed identity, and this is the semantic trap that Simone de Beauvoir created when she said one is not born but becomes a woman. And that is in part true in that you grow into womanhood and that you have a set of virtues associated with womanhood, but by socially constructing an identity for womanhood, she involuntarily politicizes the entire category and lays claim as a feminist to women as a class. And this is the problem if you buy into the gender identity perspective of, if you see womanhood as a costume, then a certain number of new prescriptions come with that costume that are at odds with historical standards.
Well, they absolutely do see womanhood as a costume, as Matt Walsh pointed out. They just don't want to say that out loud. It might also have something to do with sexual fetishes, but you didn't hear that from me.
It's just gender blackface, I'm going to say it. So, Penny Mordaunt says, I am biologically a woman. If I have a hysterectomy or mastectomy, I am still a woman. And I am legally a woman. Some people are born male and who have been through the gender recognition process are also legally female. I'm sure we're going to get onto the redefinition of female in your segment.
Oh, we will.
That does not mean they are biologically women like me. Okay, then Penny, how can you be a biological category legally without being that biological category? Can you square that circle for me? Please, for the love of God, understand the definitions of words. You're not Humpty Dumpty. You can't make whatever word mean that you think it means. Okay. Then it turns to her book that's often lauded. I'm sure it was a bestseller.
She can read? Let alone write?
Well, someone can certainly ghostwrite for her. Mm. Penny Mordaunt's book was endorsed by Tony Blair and Bill Gates.
What's her book on?
Greater Britain After the Storm. So COVID-19 recovery. It's her own Klaus Schwab's Great Reset.
Of course. So how to solve the problems that we caused.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's like burglars breaking into home and then selling you home insurance. Mordaunt sought policy advice from former Labour PM and Blair's Chancellor, Gordon Brown, as well. for her leadership campaign. You know, the man that sold all our gold reserves off and worsened the recession and actually caused a lot of discord between the Blair government and number 11.
I was going to say, you mentioned it's not just advice. Didn't you say it was economic advice from Gordon Brown as well?
And campaigning advice as well. You know, Gordon Brown, not at all famous for his gaffes on the campaign trail.
Gordon Brown, the bigot. The charisma vacuum himself.
Oh, I don't know. He's got at least one eye on the ball. no wonder Carl called the Conservatives Blair Light in Monday's podcast. Then Toby Young has done a review of her book, The Man at the Head of the Free Speech Union, doing God's work on defending our civil liberties. The book praises Black Lives Matter for having drawn attention to inequality and injustice. It complains about sitcoms like It Ain't Hot Hot Mum. I'll try that again. It Ain't Half Hot Mum, thanks to the tongue twister, for casual racism, homophobia, white privilege, colonialism, and transphobia. It agrees with the critical race theory position that logic and reason are white hegemonic constructs. She says, the problem is that most of our leaders are drawn from a narrow background. Their education and training was from the last century, when the world was very different. It was long-term, male, patient, predictable, factual, planned, heterosexual, white, Christian, Western. Sorry, all of the non-white Christians around the world will take issue with that, and all of these sane people who believe in facts, who are not necessarily white, will disagree with that.
Larry Elder would like to speak to you about this.
And I actually hold a candle
to Larry Elder. Calvin Robinson as well would probably have something to say about that. And just go back straight up to the top. The first thing in this tweet thread, glowing foreword by Bill Gates. That's all I need to know. Yep. That's all I need to know. This is not a person to be trusted.
Oh, do you have a problem with her association with Bill Gates by any chance, Harry? Because it continues.
Oh,
Penny
great.
Morden co-delivered a speech with Gates at Edinburgh University in the next link. It's archived on the government website. You can take a look at the transcript. There's also a video of it, which we're not going to play in the next bit. But the purpose of this was to launch the Global Academy of Agriculture and Food Security.
Yeah. Food security.
Yes. So the idea that Bill Gates buying up a lot of farmland means that what? That we're suddenly going to have a squeeze on food security because he's growing corn for ethanol and that suddenly he has a monopoly on exactly what kind of food we eat, like synthetic beef only.
Personally, when I want to consider of excellent farmers, I immediately go to billionaire tech moguls to be able to grow my food.
Well, especially with those breasts. And I mean Bill Gates, not Penny Morden. she was then endorsed by George Freeman, MP, in CapEx. It's a Centre for Policy Studies outlet, which I've written for before. So they're actually not a bad outlet. The problem is George Freeman, if you investigate his background, if you look at his Twitter profile, he said that she's a Prime Minister for Uni Prosperity and Security. The problem is we're not very secure with the infiltration of our MPs by the World Economic Forum. He's saying that we've got to make markets work for the many, which is a literal Corbynist slogan. And then in the next tweet, he just tweets out a graphic of arch Bond villain himself with probably the most totalitarian quote I've ever heard. The fourth industrial revolution will affect the very essence of our human experience. So he's pushing transhumanism. Great.
Potentially, other than that, just complete social engineering on display right there. Change the very essence of our human experience means we need to manipulate you to be able to, so that you actually are fine with everything that we're trying to do.
So, excuse me if I'm not too enthusiastic about this cabinet. So then Morden then partnered with the WEF on climate change. She said, I will co-host the Ellen MacArthur Foundation and the World Economic Forum's Global Plastics Action Partnership, a meeting with major brands, waste management companies and investors, basically a private-public partnership. Almost like corporatism. Almost like fascism. We are going to be discussing how we can put the global plastic supply chain on a more sustainable footing. Now, we can agree with the causes here. We can agree that plastics in our oceans, even in our lungs, microplastics in our food aren't a good thing. We can also say that we don't want an unaccountable, unelected totalitarian organization like the WEF having command over this.
I mean, even despite that, I mean, obviously, I agree with you completely. Why would I consider the government to be the people best equipped to be able to handle this? Why? What skills do you have to get? Do you have to have to be in government? Is it responsible fiscal responsibility? Rishi Sunak says no. Is it actually knowing what you're talking about when it comes to green issues? No. Boris Johnson and Net Zero shows that. Is it having any kind of problem-solving skills whatsoever? No. It's how well you lie and how charismatic you are while you're doing it.
Well, unfortunately for Penny Morden, she's not that charismatic, but she is definitely a chameleonic liar. She then cited the WEF in a speech on achieving global pay equity. And it says gender equality here, but she's saying closing the fictional gender pay gap. So, complete nonsense.
What? At this point, I mean, we bang home about this so often, but what is conservative about the conservatives at this point? Because as far as I'm concerned, this isn't even conservatism as progressivism going the speed limit. This is just pure progressivism to the extent that the Labour Party are pushing it. Maybe there's a few dissenters within the ranks. But the fact of the matter is that, sadly, as far as it's concerned, the Conservatives have derailed and ostracised any amount of discussion anywhere to the right of them. The fact of the matter is, if you're a party like UKIP that was actually trying to promote right-wing ideas and say, hey, let's get control of our borders or other sorts of things, you're just immediately dismissed as a fascist. And the Conservative Party has a big role to play in that by platforming these sorts of people on supposedly conservative platforms. It's terrible.
Well, you're not allowed a sort of parochial concern, a Little Englander mentality, because they've already decided on the utopian global conclusion. And all this is your frustration with the fact that this isn't conservative, because they're not trying to be. This is just global identity socialism with a blue rosette.
Well, it's the fact as well that you can basically just get attributed to being a Nazi. If you say, for instance, don't want to support the war in Ukraine, that just means, like you say, you're an evil Little Englander.
You don't want
isolationist.
To support Nazis in Ukraine, Nazi.
Well, yeah, there's this weird application of the idea that unless you put everybody else's goals above your own, that makes you basically the same as Neville Chamberlain. You're just another person who back in World War II wouldn't have wanted to go and save the Jews, as if that's the real reason we even entered World War II in the first place.
And considering Klaus Schwab's father's connections, which we will not comment on here, but are in my article on ESGs, I wouldn't be comparing his opponents to the Nazis. So, this is all very interesting because Boris, actually, not many people know, banned ministers from attending the WEF conference, but they still maintained involvement. So, again, the idea that it's just conservatism in name only, but they're pushing forward with the globalist agenda is irrefutably true.
So, is that image of the local Davos police force that Callum and I have covered before?
That's the image of the Spectre agents hiding out on top of Blofeld's snowy mountain lair. Speaking of globalist captured people, Rishi Sunak, the only candidate who's been openly endorsed by a Chinese party outlet. Now, Rishi Sunak has actually made an interesting promise. He's promised to crack down on grooming gang crime, saying they will never again be repeated. Now, Sajid Javid promised the same thing, of course, and nothing came of it. So whether or not anything actually happens if he does become Prime Minister will remain to be seen. But I sincerely hope he doesn't become Prime Minister because his economic record is atrocious. And I'll just go through a few quick points here. He bankrupted the country with the fraud-fraught COVID furlough scheme and also Eat Out to Help Out, which slashed restaurant bills by half, but it's because they were to do with taxes, so in fact you were paying for your own bill twice over. He reversed his position on Labour's windfall tax and oil and gas profits to increase his proposed £200 energy loan, which he would have had to pay back over 4 years, to a £400 non-repayable rebate. The problem is that deters investment in future energy security in Britain, and also down the road they're just going to increase their prices anyway because nobody's going to lose out on a bonus. He refused to cut tax further on fuel when almost half the prices paid at pumps are tax. When he brought in his 5p fuel duty cut, he was already taking in 7p more a litre in VAT increases because of his money printing. So technically, he's still taking 2p more a litre anyway, and that drives inflation. And he implemented a global 15% minimum corporation tax with a bunch of other countries, and he's looking to increase that well beyond, I believe it's about 24%, which was higher than even Corbyn proposed at 18%.
Yes, and as I covered yesterday, he is absolutely refusing to even consider a tax cut for us lowly plebs, because that would apparently drive inflation, the same inflation that he caused in the first place, or at least certainly helped to cause, and presumably might be taking advice from the head of the International Monetary Fund, seeing as people seem to be wanting to report on that, like the BBC, who actually advised that the best thing to do in a situation like this would be to increase taxes, because these people have completely bought into the modern monetary theory idea that taxes is basically just the government trying to keep money out of the economy so that it won't cause inflation, which is just absolute nonsense.
Well, I once spoke to an Oxford academic at a supposedly conservative summit, and I questioned him as to why they weren't doing tax cuts to fund certain programs, so targeted tax incentives for infrastructure upgrades on this levelling up promise. And he actually said tax cuts are a form of redistribution, because he somehow believes that the government is a progenitor of all wealth.
Oh, God, yes. The money comes from government. And once again, it's just the idea that taxes destroy money. I don't understand how anybody could ever come to that. And once again, the idea that letting people keep more of their own money that they earned in the first place, that the government, by all rights, has no claim to in the first place, is redistribution, is just a disgusting example of how these people see you and I as just completely beneath them.
Yeah, it's the asinine bass ackwards approach to economics that sets the state as the progenitor of all things productive.
We are hamsters in a maze to these people, and they're just trying to lead us by the nose to the piece of cheese that they've got to keep us going. It's absolutely horrifying. I hate this.
Speaking of bad bankers, Rishi Sunak was famous for formerly working at Goldman Sachs, who are another WEF partner.
The most trustworthy bank in the world.
Yes, who have also doubtless partnered with them on digital IDs and financial technologies. Speaking of financial technologies, Sunak is his family business, actually, and this is reported by the National Pulse, is a group called InfoSight. So this is a firm owned by the father of his non-dom citizen, non-tax-paying wife at a time where he's put up taxes massively. I'm trying to pronounce his Indian name. Akshata Murthy. He's the founder of InfoSight, which is an Indian tech company which is suspected as being part of the information gathering infrastructure for the social credit system of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset. InfoSight is actually a WEF partner. As you can see, they have a web page on the WEF's website in the next link. Shockingly, Sunak is now the man that is using this information gathering and his time in the financial sector to spearhead digital currencies for the G7. Majid Nawaz already exposed this as a flashpoint moment on Joe Rogan's podcast. I've written about this a bunch of times, including for the WEF ESG's piece on the Lotus Eaters website. And basically, digital currencies are a centralized digital form of transaction that the government can see using blockchain technology every single transaction that's taken place. So nothing will be against taxation, outside taxation. There'll be no cash in hand. And suddenly, if you say the wrong thing on your social media, which will be backed up by your online harms bill digital passport, then boom, there goes your ability to earn or save overnight.
I mean, at the end of the day, if the government controls the economy, they control you. If the government controls the money supply, they control you.
And there's a very mask-off moment in the next article, actually, because Tom Mutton, the head of the Bank of England, suggested governments could introduce programmability with built-in smart contracts, ensuring that restrictions could be placed on where and how currencies are spent and on what to ensure socially beneficial outcomes. ESGs in action on the consumer level. So it's funny, actually, that the best insight we have against this kind of economic control, as you said, if the government controls the money, they control you, is from Vladimir Lenin. Let's read him directly. The big banks are the state apparatus which we need to bring about socialism and which we can take ready-made from capitalism. A single state bank, the biggest of the big, with branches in every rural district, in every factory, will constitute as much of 9/10 of the socialist apparatus. This will be countrywide bookkeeping, countrywide accounting of the production and distribution of goods. This will be, so to speak, something in the nature of the skeleton of a socialist society. So Rishi Sunak is reading from the Leninist Revolutionary Playbook here and essentially amounting a digital communist takeover of our currencies.
Well, I mean, his buddy Klaus does have a bust of Lenin in his room.
I think that's disputed, but I wouldn't put it past him. I think someone said it was someone else, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was.
It looked
Lenin.
An awful lot like Lenin,
and
man.
Considering
was this fact-checked? Was this debunked fact-checkers?
Considering Klaus's links to Paulo Freire, which a Marxist educator, which James Lindsay has done God's work exposing, and I might be discussing on tomorrow's podcast, I wouldn't be shocked if it actually was. So why is Rishi Sunak a frontrunner if this is just all this kind of terrible nonsense? Well, because his other closest rivals, as we've already covered, and his second closest rival are just is equally corrupt or incompetent. Let's look at Liz Truss, shall we? In ITV's leadership debate, I did timestamp this for... Oh, no, I think this is the... Is this the clip for the taxes one? Okay, so Liz Truss decided to call out Rishi Sunak's record on the economy, and he then turned around and called her, of all things, a socialist. Let's play the clip.
Expectations. Rishi Sunak, I'd really like to give you the opportunity to just draw breath there, because you are the person to pose the next question. Far away.
Ah, right. My question is for Liz, actually. Liz, in your past, you've been both a Liberal Democrat and a Remainer. I was just wondering which one you regretted most.
I am somebody who was not born into the Conservative Party. I went to school in Paisley and Leeds. I went to a comprehensive school. My parents were left-wing activists, and I've been on a political journey ever since. But my fundamental belief, and the reason I am a Conservative, is I saw kids at my school being let down in Leeds. I saw them not get the opportunities, not get the proper educational standards that you might have got at your school, Rishi. I saw them having wasted potential, and I thought that waste was wrong. That's why I'm Conservative, because I believe that everybody needs to have that opportunity. I believe in high education standards. That's why I'm proud I introduced the new maths GCSE, which my daughter is now sitting, that gives people a better grounding. That's why I'm proud of signing all those trade deals, so we can give opportunities to companies right around this country. That's why I became a Conservative.
That's all right.
Sorry, did she just basically say that she's a Conservative because she believes in equality, which is a left-wing kind of principle?
Yes. Well, she's talking like a materialist rather than having any kind of conservative metaphysic, putting forward a belief in the family or gratitude for having inherited a culture.
No mention of hierarchy there. We need everyone to be the same, everyone to be able to have the same opportunities, which is a foundational logic that will only lead you to socialism.
Yeah, and it's profoundly anti-Burkean as well. I did actually get those clips, unfortunately, slightly mixed up, because that was her response to Rishi Sunak asking, what are you more ashamed of, being a Lib Dem at the time where you wanted to abolish the monarchy, or a Remainer? And I thought Liz Truss's response, even though the content of it wasn't great, is probably her least wooden delivery, because if anyone's watched any of the other debates, she has been stiff as a board and looking like a deer in the headlights, clearly can't go off script. But the other clip is actually the second one, which I'm very sorry for annoying you there, John, is him calling her a socialist.
Rishi, you have raised taxes to the highest level in 70 years. That is not going to drive economic growth. You raised national insurance, even though people like me opposed it in cabinet at the time, because we could have afforded to fund the NHS through general taxation. The fact is that raising taxes at this moment will choke off economic growth and will prevent us getting the revenue we need to pay off the debt.
Rishi Sunak, respond to Liz Truss.
No, I mean, we have to also recognise that we just went through a once-in-a-century pandemic with all the damage that it did to our economy. And I think everyone realises that we were going to have to pay that back. But I'd love to stand here. I'd love to stand here and say, look, I'll cut this tax, that tax and another tax, and it will all be OK. But you know what? It won't. There's a cost to these things, the cost of higher inflation, higher mortgage rates, eroded savings. And you know what? This something-for-nothing economics isn't conservative, it's socialism.
Under your plans, we are predicted to have a recession because you have raised tax, it is cutting back on growth, it is preventing companies from investing, and it's taking money out of people's pockets. That is no way to get the economy going during a recession.
And we're in a recession, and they just need to bloody admit it rather than dance around the subject.
Well, he's not even dancing around the subject. Rishi Sunak is speaking as if the economy itself caught COVID, and he's not taking any accountability for how his policies demonstrably damaged our economy. And if we look at the Telegraph's reporting on this, Rishi Sunak is the man who presided over the Bank of England's quantitative easing strategy, which printed £150 billion in November 2020 alone to pay for the second round of his furlough scheme. So if that was the trend, what the hell else went on? What other figures are there out there? Is that
just for purely furlough? That's not including businesses that he would have bailed out, who would have failed otherwise?
Assuming so, because of course we had the COVID bounce back scheme and we also had the Out to Help Out scheme, so we spent an insane amount, and then we also wasted lots on fraud, hence why one of the Treasury ministers, or was it a minister, or was it one of the members of the House of Lords, that resigned saying, I've presided over too much incompetence, I can't look at this anymore.
I mean, if he's so desperate to not cut taxes, because otherwise how are we supposed to pay back all of those debts? I mean, we could just slash a hell of a lot of the government spending that's already going off to basically non-productive, wasteful means, such as all of the equality and diversity departments across NHS trusts across the country.
Which, non-specifically, Liz Truss is actually implying a promise of, because she has said she's open to leaving the ECHR. She has said that she's looking to bring the income tax threshold lowering forward. She said that she's looking to scrap the national insurance rise and scrap the green levies, which everyone's been going on about. The only problem with Liz Truss is...
I was going to say, are you trying to win me over to Truss?
She might be having some good advisors in her camp. However, Liz Truss as a person herself, after telling people to go off and fight in the Ukraine war and getting a bunch of people incarcerated and possibly executed, and saying something like this here, which we won't play, but she said genuinely, with a straight face, that the Americans like Love Island, therefore we'll do a trade deal with them. Liz Truss is a babbling idiot.
I think trade deals have a bit more to do with that.
That's genuinely like saying we'll enter a war together because of Harry Potter. Now, you might wonder why Liz Truss has got this high, and Thomas Dowling did cover on the website why we can't trust the Truss, so go and look at that. But Truss is specifically a beneficiary of David Cameron's all-woman shortlists, which Cole covered on Monday, but David Cameron did to diversify the cabinet, basically to sabotage the competence of Conservative candidates, which is the reason we've got these clowns now. Now, why did Liz Truss's career flounder so heavily? Was it just purely her incompetence? Well, no. If we're looking at Boris Johnson's record of malfeasance, Liz Truss has had her own scandals. Liz Truss had an affair with Foreign Office Minister Mark Field, who is notorious for snogging Jeremy Hunt's wife. God knows why you'd want to. She runs a TV program for Chinese state-owned media. But also he's famous for being the guy who forcibly removed a Greenpeace activist by the neck from a Tory party dinner. I believe there's a... If you scroll down a little bit, there might be an image of this. That's him snogging Jeremy Hunt's wife.
Was Jeremy Hunt in that crowd when that was going on?
I believe he might have been. He wrestled this woman out of a Tory party function because she showed up to protest it, and he just grabs her by the neck and hauls her out, thought patrolling.
I'm beginning to like this man.
Yeah, so he's quite based. However, Liz Truss clearly does not have that many conservative principles. Even though she salvaged her marriage from this affair, she's hardly a change of pace from misconduct. So she might well be a vote for your own preferential interest if you'd like more money in your pocketbook, particularly against Rishi Sunak when she might be becoming the other candidate in the final two. But let's not hold out high hopes of her being any kind of articulate person on the global stage. Suffice to say, her career has not been short of misconduct either. So, am I excited about any of the Conservative candidates? As you might tell, not really. As Labour MP Clive Lewis actually quipped, something smart from the Labour benches for once, it's like soiling your pants and deciding you're going to change your shirt. All are compromised by their long ascension up the Tory party apparatus. When you've compromised your way to get into power, compromise becomes the doctrine of your power, or their affiliation with unelected international institutions like the WEF or the UN. None have proposed an immigration moratorium, for example. Many speak the same race-conscious language of progressives. You see some people even going after Kemi Badenoch despite her husband's terrible record by saying, oh, she's a black woman that can challenge progressive narratives on race. I don't care about her colour. I care about the content of character and policies. I don't think her policies rule that great. I don't think her husband's character was all that great, and I don't trust any of them. I'm glad Boris is gone. I'm one of the people that was calling for him to go, particularly because he put me and you under house arrest for 2 years. Utterly unforgivable. I don't care if he had libertarian instincts. He betrayed every single one of those. But things have unfortunately and can always get worse. If the communists in the Labour Party decide to swap their cardboard cutout Blairite leader at the moment for someone with any modicum of charisma, they'll storm the next election. And this is a conservative suicide in their making, and I'm only angry because we are forced to pay for their mistakes. Sorry for the black pill.
Well, if everybody at home would like to put the knives down and settle down as well.
Stop running the bath and getting the toaster.
Yeah, so we'll move on to something that's a little bit funnier, maybe. I guess we'll find out as we go through, but it will be covering abortion and other such things again. So sorry about that. We'll try and keep the spirit light and the mood light and breezy. So in this week's episode of It's Always Sunny in Washington, the squad has got arrested, and they've tried to make as much of a show of it as possible. Before we go further, you should check out our premium book club we did last week on Michael J. Knowles' Speechless, about how the language that we use is actually the way in which we interface with the world and can help to change our perceptions, which is something that the left has been absolutely brilliant at, especially when it comes to the abortion debate. And it's very, very important to understand their tactics, learn the tactics, and maybe even, as much as it may go against some principles, use those tactics against them, because otherwise we are just going to keep seeing the culture shift left and left and left until we're all attending family-based drag queen story hour orgies with our small children. And I don't think any of us want that.
A quick point on that. I don't think it actually goes against principles, just because we don't have equal, we have fair. And if you guys want to turn over the board, you're no longer protected by the rules of the game. No monopoly money for you. Go and sit in jail.
Well, yes, that is the classical liberal idea of you have your rights until you violate somebody else's rights, at which point you have forfeited your rights. So, good point to make there. Anyway, let's get into it. So, there's been a few arrests outside of the Supreme Court after a recent protest that was going on there, where the Squad, for those of you who aren't aware, the Squad is a coalition of about six Democratic representatives from the Senate. Most of them started this back in, what was it, like 2018?
Yeah, it was the 2018 midterms when it was Congress as well as the Senate.
Yeah, and it includes people like Ilhan Omar, everybody's favourite big booty Latina, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and other such people. I just had to sneak that in somewhere.
Paper bag and it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, I just had to throw it.
Look, lads, we were all thinking it.
But yeah, they were all protesting in for baby murder outside of the Supreme Court after the recent overturn of Roe v. Wade, which isn't banning abortion. It's instead putting the putting the decision back into the hands of the state, which is what the whole American advent experiment was supposed to do in the first place. This whole decentralization of power that it was based on. Yeah, that's this in practice. But anyway, I'll just read through some of this. So Ilhan Omar and the rest of the squad were arrested outside the Supreme Court on Tuesday during a pro-abortion, pro-baby murder protest attended by other members of Congress. Other Congress attendees included AOC, Cori Bush, another member of the squad, and Carolyn Maloney, as well as other members of the Democratic Women's Caucus, who were detained by officers. Following her arrest, Omar tweeted that she was arrested while participating in a civil disobedience action outside the court in response to their June ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade. According to Digits and Letters, 34 people in total were arrested during the protest on Tuesday, with 16 of them being members of Congress. It's currently unclear who from Congress was arrested. We've got video footage of a few of them getting arrested, but we'll find out. U.S. Capitol Police said that they did this because the demonstrators had illegally blocked First Street, which runs alongside the Supreme Court. They said three warnings had been issued and made arrests, with the street being cleared just after 1:30 p.m. And
that's, lock her up. I'm sorry.
Yes, I mean, the quartering did share an amusing image of the AOC, you know, the image of her crying next to the fence, except in a little jail cell that I forgot to bring up. But anyway, people did immediately start to notice something funky going on with the way that the squad were parading themselves around as they were being arrested. They certainly, I mean, no one's going to be shocked that AOC, of all people, is very, very performative, but it was very amusing to see this nonetheless. Just scroll down so we can see this image. We'll see the video in a moment, but as we can see, there's AOC's nice big smug face and her holding her arms behind her back with her hands together like she's been cuffed, when instead she's just doing it so that it looks like it. It's purely performative.
You know that old joke about the Handmaid's Tale? It's like when the feminists...
Well, that everything is like the Handmaid's Tale as long as it's going badly.
Well, no. It's the one where the feminist is saying, you want to put me in a red bonnet, don't you? And we're like, what? No.
She should have brought the red bonnet. It would have really completed the look.
Well, it's like, you want to tie me down and forcibly impregnate me, don't you? No, no. And it's basically them playing out their fetishes as a so-called dystopia. This is her. Oh, you really want to handcuff me, don't you? It's like, no, Congresswoman.
Listen, okay. This is more of a personal anecdote, but a number of drunk women over the years have admitted to me to watching a copious amount of rape fantasy porn. It's very disturbing, and it seems to be exclusively something that women watch, which is very interesting.
We do not endorse rape.
No, of course we do not.
However, those that believe women do not like misogyny have never slept with one, and I will leave it at that.
That's also very, very true.
Next.
But yeah, let's just take a look at the clips, because I think the clips are the most indicative of it. So here's the one of Ilhan Omar pretending to be cuffed. So just play this for us, John. This is a little bit blurry. We don't really need to worry about the audio because it's just background audio here. But here's Ilhan Omar. Immediately, first thing you can notice is she adjusts her little headscarf thing.
Well, also, nobody's even walking her over. She voluntarily...
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
Wait, just this last moment here, we can see as she... Oh, raises up her hand. Raises up her hand to say hello to the crowd. Hello, all of my loving followers. I hope you're doing... Oh, I'm supposed to be arrested right now. Oh, sorry. And here's the one of AOC as well, which makes it... Which is even clearer, where we can see that nice big... She raises up her fist for the audience and then puts it behind there. Heartbreaking. That big smile as well. She's loving every second of this. But it just goes to show just how performative it is. And then she holds her hand back behind her. But I mean, to be fair, to grant benefit of the doubt, what might have been happening is they might have just all coincidentally chosen to take this in a magnanimous way and hold their hands behind their back pensively to let everybody know that this is not something that they agree with, but they will accept anyway for the purposes of, you know, politeness, general civility. But no, we know that they're doing this purely for the aesthetic.
I'm not going to grant liars a single lapse in truth.
No, of course. I mean, they're not even very good at pretending to be arrested, like they've been cuffed in such a way, because they just can't help but perform to the crowd. They're so, so terrible at this. People have pointed out as well, Auron McIntyre saying that oppression is a core piece of the left-wing narrative. They're so thoroughly in control, however, that they have to hold their own hands behind their backs to face a basic arrest. And there are some comments in this thread saying that this is basically a ceremonial ritual at this point. And it's pretty much true, because I think that they're doing this in the hope that years from now, 50 years from now, 60 years from now, that people will look back upon acts like this and videos and images like this in the same way that some people look back on the civil rights protesters being arrested.
Well, Bernie Sanders, for example, a lot of the things in his campaign, he kept bringing up photos of him protesting against segregation.
Same thing with Jeremy Corbyn protesting apartheid back in the 80s. They always do that as a sort of like, look at how much on the right side of history we are. And they're hoping that in the future, people will look back on these women the same way.
But this is incredibly performative, because in this day and age, racism has a supply and demand problem. There's a lot of demand from left-wing activists, but there's not an awful lot of supply from actual police officers.
Or anybody, really. Let's be perfectly honest. I think most people are more than happy nowadays to just get along as long as you get along. As long as you're polite to me, whatever.
I would rather live next to, like, for example, my old Ghanaian neighbours who are devout Christians, family people, than any of these clowns.
Exactly. And if we want just another example of the power that the squad has and desperately don't want you to think they have, because they want you to think that they are the desperate rebels to do a leftism here and just analogize this to Star Wars. They want you to think that they're the heroic, selfless rebels fighting across against the evil Empire, when in fact it turns out they're just as much of that Empire as everybody else.
Where's the button? I'll blow up Alderaan myself.
But this one's quite interesting, because you told me to look into this and I found it quite fun. AOC and a number of the other members of the squad have all at varying points, except for maybe one or two of them, been investigated for potential fraud and embezzlement of campaign funds that went into suspicious people's back pockets. Except, after an investigation was done into this by the FEC, the Federal Electoral Election Commission, that explicitly found that AOC did not properly disclose the purpose of disbursements to similarly named shell companies that were set up by her former chief of staff, they just decided to dismiss the complaint. They just decided to dismiss it, which has led to the National Legal and Policy Center filing a lawsuit against that federal agency in Washington, D.C. federal court, blasting the investigations panel for not providing a reason for its dismissal of the complaint. So the money that we were looking at was about over $1 million. I mean, who knows the exact figure, but it was definitely up there in the six, seven figure territory. And they found that, yes, she wasn't properly telling everybody where this was going or where it came from. And they just went, no problem, though. We don't care. We'll just brush it aside for you. We know that you're fighting the good fight, AOC.
Repressive tolerance in action. This is just a unilateral application of the rule of law. And if any Republican were to slip up, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a defender of all Republicans,
no,
because
of course
many of them are uniparty rhinos, but you know the hammer will be brought down on them for this exact thing.
Absolutely. At the time of this segment recording, there is no update as to that lawsuit, but I will try and keep an eye on it, because that will be very, very interesting. Even on the National Legal and Policy Center's website, they've not done an update on it since they've filed the lawsuit. So I imagine it's going through that sort of private manner right now. So we'll see what happens with that and how it reflects back onto AOC, although I doubt it will reflect very well back onto her or any of the members of the squad. But about that protest as well, let's see who they were protesting with. An organization called Rise Up for Abortion Rights, which is about makes as much sense as Rise Up for Murder Rights, because that's what you are doing.
It's the same thing.
Yes, the illegitimate overturning of abortion rights must not stand. Into the streets to demand the federal government, scroll down for me, John, please.
Well,
must restore legal abortion nationwide now.
At least they'll achieve this goal within one generation.
So they were started in 2022, so this year. They use green as their colour motif, and they encourage angry but peaceful protests, and it includes slogans like abortion on demand without apology, the typical kind of thing. And if we just scroll through a little bit of this website, I just want to draw a point to everybody's attention to. A lot of the images will include the type of women you expect to see at these protests, the same kind of dyed hair, dogmatic protesters that we see at all of these demonstrations, and every so often the odd token attractive woman to tell you that it's all not these same people.
Yeah, but I guarantee that attractive woman's vagina looks like a graveyard.
Sadly, it probably is a graveyard.
Yeah.
And they want to force states that elect pro-life representatives, places like Missouri, for instance, which has been one of the first ones to try and repeal any laws allowing abortion and create a statewide ban. They're trying to force those states that elect those people to represent their needs to allow abortion, which is, of course, the purpose of democracy, is forcing people to do things that their elected representatives don't want to do in the first place.
I mean, that is the purpose of democracy in South Korea, which is the Democratic People's Republic of South Korea, because, of course, if you appoint yourself as the vanguard party speaking on behalf of the proletariat, then you're democratic, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. But to all of these people, I just say, just move to a different state if you desperately want that
just
abortion.
Just cross state lines.
Yeah, the only problem of... Well, I mean, yeah, crossing state lines to commit murder, actually. Yeah, you're right. But the only problem is that all of the major pro-abortion states tend to be Democrat-run hellholes, so maybe it is that Texas is just an actually nicer state to live in, and maybe if you want to be able to enjoy that standard of living, you kind of need to get along with the local culture and the local principles, because people act as if the US is this one giant conglomerate of all the same people. It's really not. When the more you look into the different culture of each state, so you realize that they are very distinct from one another. And that's one of the good things about it, and that's why I'm completely in favor of a place like Texas just breaking off from the rest of the country.
Can I just point out, sorry, that's in this image on the screen, they're protesting for the right to kill another human being by lethally injecting them, dissecting them, and sucking their brains out for a Hoover. But God forbid they get a mild cough, because they're all standing around in a bloody mass 2 years on from it.
Well, I mean, of course, Cori Bush here can't transmit anything, even through that megaphone. I mean, the megaphone acts as a mask if you hold it close enough. So that's perfectly fine.
There's something darkly comedic in her last name being Bush.
But one of the other things that pushed this protest on was the fact that Cori Bush has been trying, who is one of the members of the squad, has been trying to pass new abortion legislation, as we can see from this leftist website here, Common Dreams, saying that her and Senator Tina Smith introduced bicameral legislation on Monday aimed at bolstering access to medication abortion as Republican-led states across the US attempt to restrict distribution of the pills in their drive to ban abortion entirely. So what this is medical abortion pills that you're able to order to your state over the post, and if they deliver it to you and find out that you've done this in a state that, for instance, prohibits abortion, you can get arrested and fined up to $50,000. And they want to make sure that states that don't want that are forced to be able to cater to these people who reasonably should have just been a bit more responsible with their sexual decisions, but God forbid we promote individual responsibility in Democrat-run states, for instance. If passed, the Protecting Access to Medication Abortion Act would codify into federal law the Food and Drug Administration's Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy for Mifepristone. Thank you. One of two medications commonly used in tandem to end pregnancy. In December, the FDA permanently lifted its requirement that Mifepristone be administered in person, allowing patients to receive the medication through the mail. The new bill would also ensure those seeking abortion care can always access medication abortion through telehealth and certified pharmacies, including mail order pharmacies, according to the summary released from Bush's office. Abortion care, they say, is healthcare, and therefore a human right. I'm sorry to break it to you, but healthcare neither is a human right either, because healthcare is not inalienable. You kind of need to force other people to give you healthcare if you want it to be a right provided for you by the state, when rights are in fact either provided to you by nature or God, depending whether you're religious or secular.
And you need to be alive to exercise your right, meaning the right to life is foundational to all rights, meaning don't kill a baby.
Yes, and of course, and I'm going to quote from, well, not quote, but reference Peter Hitchens here and say, if life does not begin at conception, where does it? Where does it begin? Logically speaking, where else can it begin? Other than conception. The moment you're conceived, that's when you start developing, whether you're conscious or not. So where else can life begin? Every other measure of it is purely arbitrary. And they carry on, while extremist anti-abortion lawmakers in states like Missouri use the recent decisions made by the stolen Supreme Court to attack a person's right to bodily autonomy, I remain committed to ensuring everyone in this country can have access to an abortion, no matter where they live, or no matter what it was that they voted for, or whether their elected representatives that represent the community actually want that to be the case or not. So thank you, democracy, another big win for us there. I will also point out, having read through the bill itself, nowhere does it mention the word woman, and it only ever mentions, I think, pregnant person is the term they use in it, so that should go to show.
Did Penny Mordaunt draft it?
Possibly. And speaking of the Supreme Court of the United States, House Democrats have been calling for additional Supreme Court seats to be added, another 4 to be specific, so that after Clarence Thomas, in the decision on, I think it was Dobbs v. Jackson, was what overturned Roe v. Wade, after he brought up the fact that, well, based on all of this reasoning, we should probably also look into gay marriage, contraceptives, all these other things that have been forced upon the states by federal legislation. And now the Democrats are in a massive scramble so that they can try and get more seats on there so they can try and pack the court, because of course at the moment it's 6-3 conservatives to liberals, and if they can get 4 more on and then pack it with 4 more liberals, then that would make it 6-7. And I wonder why it is that they would be very interested in doing that. And just to clarify a few of the other things that have been going on in regards to the culture war as well, we've got Matt Walsh pointing out that Merriam-Webster's dictionary has finally updated the definition of female, because we really needed an update all these years later, adding a B definition saying having a gender identity that is the opposite of male.
I am accidentally all for this because it reinforces the gender binary.
It does, but also, how useless of a definition is that?
Because gender identity would be it's a nonsense term anyway, because it shouldn't exist. Well, it's a linguistic term, but it would be. Well, what would it even be? It wouldn't be female, because female's biological classification, and
well,
it wouldn't.
Well, imagine if you said if you said to me, Harry, what's a sofa? And I said, well, it's not a train. I mean, it's like, okay, you might need to narrow it down a little bit for me.
This is actually the Hegelian concept of everything's defined by its opposite, rather than having an intrinsic property, which then fed into Marx's belief that everything's socially constructed, which then fed into the social.
Well, we need to question everything without remorse.
Yes, as we covered in our book club on Michael Knowles' book.
Yes, and for those of you who've been keeping track of the culture war that's been going on with the whole gender debate, one of the things that people on our side of the aisle tend to point out is that you can go back, find archaeological remains of skeletons from like 2,000, 3,000 years ago, and one of the first things scientists will be able to determine is the sex of it, which is one of the things that shows that sex is an inalienable biological characteristic. It is not something that you can just decide upon. You can't just wake up one day and go, I'm a girl now, or vice versa. Well, guess what? We all knew it was coming, because it is honestly quite an effective argument that they can't really argue back against, because once again, we're pointing to scientific truths. That is something that they are starting to attack now. Gender activists are seeking to prevent identifying human remains as male and female. Can you guess the logic?
Stop.
Can you guess the logic?
I'm going to guess it'll be like with the female Vikings idea of where if they were buried with like their wife's clothes or something, they said that you can't assume they didn't wear it, therefore their gender identity.
Nope.
No, okay.
No, it's that the archaeologists are assigning you a gender you might not have identified as in life. And they say, so Emma Palladino, who is a master's degree student at the University of Montreal and had a big Twitter thread about this, said that, so regardless of whether you transition, you can't escape your assigned sex. Assigned, in this case, of course, being nature.
Actual.
Assigning that to you, or God. Depending on your perspective, let me tell you why that's BS. She then, of course, privated the Twitter thread.
said that there's nothing like academic rigor by privating the Twitter thread.
Yeah, and she said they're assigning human remains a gender identity instead of simply observing and recording their sex, but that's what they are doing,
reality.
And that's what you're arguing against. While a bioarchaeologist might identify a set of remains as probably female, it's understood that the gender of an individual is never necessarily the same as their sex, and that gender is a whole spectrum we've barely begun to unpack. No, it's not, you absolute brainlet. Nope. And the Trans Doe Task Force, which is a real thing, by the way, a group formed by gender activists, also say that they're seeking to explore ways in which the current standards in forensic human identification do a disservice to people who do not clearly fit the gender binary. So this is once again just another example of this kind of postmodern deconstructionism worming its way into all of this. What's that look on your face for?
Are they called Trans Doe because it's an acronym for Trans Dodo, because that's the way 42% of them are going?
I would have thought it would be Jane Doe and John Doe, for instance, but I prefer that one. I would also think it's because most trans people look rather doughy, but that might be a different reason.
You might be saying that's an ad hominem attack. Yes.
It is. It is, absolutely. Also, it's not wrong, is it? The group's mission statement reads, "We propose a gender-expansive approach to human identification by combining missing and unidentified databases looking for contextual clues, such as descendants wearing clothing culturally coded to gender other than the assigned sex." Once again, this has no bearing on whether or not people are accurate in determining the sex of somebody when they unearth their remains, because once again, they could have been a circus performer, they could have been a butcher, they could have been any sort of thing. That doesn't really change what we're determining when we figure out what sex they were.
Many trans people do look like circus performance.
This is true. And just to follow all of this off, just to, once again, this is the next institution they're coming for. Be prepared. We knew it was coming eventually because it is an effective argument, though. But one of the last things I want to point out is going back to the abortion thing. Somebody in the comments of our podcast we did last week pointed out that I should look into this Maryland Senate Bill 669, which legalizes infanticide up to 28 days after birth. Now, it does not do this explicitly, but it does it implicitly through the way that it words certain things. And I looked at this bill, and it also shows, once again, they use woman in brackets, but the main term they use is pregnant person or persons. Once again, quite dehumanizing, quite depersonalizing towards women who are pregnant, given that women are the only people that can get pregnant. And this, just to explain this, is where the debate goes on abortion. If you can determine a relativistic point in which you are given rights because of how convenient you are to the woman, what is to stop you from, what is to protect you once you're outside of the womb? If you don't have the rights when you're in the womb, how are you going to have those rights when you're out of the womb? And arguably, and almost certainly objectively, more of a detriment to the woman's self-determination, to the woman's ability to be independent, because now she literally has a dependent. What is going to stop you from saying, well, this baby is a strain on me, more so than in the womb, so therefore, I'll just cave its skull in. Or anything like, or I'll just let it starve to death. I'll just read through a little bit of this just to make it clear that this is where the logic leads to. Legislation proposed in Maryland's Senate would allow babies to be left to die for as long as after the first 28 days after birth, according to analysis from a pro-life attorney. Just to point out that it is a pro-life attorney, but having read over this, it does seem to imply that the bill definitely does seem to imply what she's saying. The bill proposes a revision of the fetal murder manslaughter statute that would serve to handcuff investigation of infant deaths unrelated to abortion, says American Center for Law and Justice attorney Olivia Summers, and she says this is because the legislation prohibits investigations and criminal prosecutions for women and medical professionals for a failure to act in relation to perinatal death. In other words, a baby born alive and well could be abandoned and left to starve or freeze to death, and nothing could be done to punish those who participated in that death. And looking through the bill, it definitely does seem to throw it that way. So this is where the debate goes to. This is what Ilhan Omar, AOC, and the rest of the squad are busy out performing for. They're not being cuffed. They are being arrested, but for a few hours, probably just held in a jail cell and then told, don't do that again. But this is what their performance is for, is to justify this sort of stuff. Whenever you hear about the woman's right to choose or anything like that, you might as well be saying the woman's right to cave in her baby's skull after it's born, because that is where this argument goes to. Anyway, that's all I've got for that one. Let's go to the video comments.
Just following up on Connor's remark that Japan is exporting a degeneracy to the West. The funny thing is that Akamatsu basically said the exact same thing in a press conference, just it was regarding the West exporting its degeneracy to the East. I wonder if he sees the irony of that statement.
It cuts it's, both ways.
I was going to say, it's probably a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, because, Japan has much more collectivist and sort of conservative culture over there, but it also has much more degenerate elements to that culture as well.
Well, it's because of the age of consent being so low over there, and therefore they sexualize children in the cartoons. And don't get me wrong,
which is highly disturbing.
I am covering
Studio Ghibli stuff with John Wheatley next week. I'm looking forward to it. I've watched some of the films. Some of them have great artistic merit. Some of them I just don't get, but it's because I'm not as entrenched in Japanese culture as John is. However, you have to admit there is a core constituency of anime fans and anime creators that do sexualize children. That does go both ways. Identity politics is imported from France, America, and therefore the rest of the West into Japan. That can corrupt their art form and their sense of national identity. I'm not going to say sorry for that because I didn't create it, but we are sorry for the Japanese people that that's happened. But don't pretend that anime hasn't been a corrupting force on some corners of the internet.
Oh, of course. I'm a person who enjoys anime. I consider it to be a very, very broad medium for storytelling. And like I've said to you before, I'm not going to just abandon cinema because Cuties got made, for instance. Yeah. But it does seem to be a little bit more prevalent in Japan than it does over here, apart from maybe some of the independent French cinema that gets made.
Yeah.
Which is all about, like, just ask Slavoj Žižek about his favourite French films. Anyway, let's carry on.
Hey everybody, I'm here in the capital. See this guy right there? Right there. Said, hey, I'm right in front of a Capitol police officer. Hey, here's this, that big ass, look at that big juicy booty.
I've got a new ringtone.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I might need to download that one as well. Based Ape doing the Lord's work, as always. I'm going to pretend I knew that comment was coming so that my comment from the segment earlier was planned in some way. Yeah, that's right.
I'm looking forward to seeing how the NATO motivates their populations to support the Ukraine conflict on the pretense that they are protecting freedoms that only appear to apply or benefit the Wethite elite. I mean, all things considered, they seem to be stripping the indigenous population of Europe of all of their rights and property as fast as they can, and the vaunted new Europeans we keep hearing about don't really care about such abstract moralisms.
Well, it's going to be hard to particularly remoralize people that have just washed up on your shores without any cultural connection to the place, and just because they're chancers who want free stuff. This is why I believe Bo and Carl have both spoken about the inevitability of remigration once a conflict happens. I think you're going to see that. If ever a global conflict broke out, you're hardly going to get a lot of British Pakistanis going to fight.
Well, yeah, they have no cultural or historical connection to these lands, so why would they feel the need to protect them?
And I'm not shocked people come over here for a better chance of life, but the problem is the amount of people that come over here for a better chance of life means that it makes a worse quality of life for everyone.
And how easy we make it for them to have a better quality of life without actually contributing to everybody else's.
Exactly.
What's going on, fellow Lotus Eaters? DJ Chi here. Just wanted to stop by and say support independent, support local, and support the ones closest to you. Recently, I just purchased some of the iSum comics from Eric July and the Ripperverse, and I also picked up several copies of Cyberfrog from Ben Skyver. I've also picked up a couple of C.S. Cooper's audiobooks, so I'm looking forward to digging into all that new material.
I actually forgot to do, when the first Cyberfrog crowdfunding for Blood Honey came out, I totally forgot to sign on, so I do still need to pick up a copy of Cyberfrog because it looks beautiful. Thank you as well to the two people who sent in their graphic novels to the office, because we've got Marks and the Bear and Mary Boys that got delivered today.
Yeah, we'll take a look over those.
I started reading Marks and the Bear and it is wonderfully quaint, and it's the kind of, I know there's a bit of implied adult material in there, but it's the exact kind of thing that would be sort of, it looks exactly like how I would hope the Daily Wire lay out their kids' content.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
The artwork was fantastic and just a really wholesome and really true message there that you need to support local, support independent. If we got to build our own culture, you best support it as well, because otherwise it's just going to fall flat on its face. I think Payday next week, I'm going to pre-order my copy of iSum number one.
I do think so as well. And of course, if you have any comic projects, etc., that you'd like us to take a look at, we do have a P.O. box.
Whether or not The Boys is a good show, its narrative undertones are a mess. It covers how corporations provide a sanitized view of a dangerous world and cover for awful people, how the mainstream media lies, and how easily people can be radicalized. However, it tries to present those enraptured by the mainstream media and those who are radicalized by online fringe groups as being one and the same people, and they always radicalize towards the right. Even worse, despite the show taking shots at supposed conspiracy theorists who do their own research, the protagonists of the show are exactly that, people who do their own research and ignore the mainstream consensus, and they're shown by the show to be correct. The show seems to want to have its cake and eat it too.
Absolutely true, everything you're saying there. While it is a very entertaining show, it's obviously very thematically confused, primarily because I think more than anything, the showrunners, Eric Kripke and Seth Rogen, one, are leftists in the first place, and two, are just trying overly hard to be edgy, but the only way that you can be edgy from a leftist perspective is to be, like, faux edgy. Everything's either swearing and blood and gore without actually any real content underneath it.
Well, it's like, as well, in the second season, there was a lamplighter was sitting on the sofa watching pornography parodies of the rest of the Seven.
Oh, yeah.
And then Seth Rogen and Eric Kripke came out and said, oh, we actually made full-on porn videos, and you can, like, watch them somewhere. I'm not sure where they put them for obvious reasons.
That's but it's like just unnecessary.
It's not just unnecessary. They think that's edgy. And it's like, dude, most women on their own are making a living from filming themselves doing this sort of stuff. You think this isn't the cultural mainstream?
Don't say most, because it's not most.
No, not most.
A shocking amount,
a sad,
sadly.
Disproportionate of the very attractive ones.
And
regarding
lot of
your segment on heat waves and the climate scare, I have found this fella at realclimatescience.com, Tony Heller. He does a really good job of challenging the current narrative. I've looked up a number of the data points that he offers, and so far they've been checking out. I don't always agree with him, but I think he's got some good things to say.
I'd recommend Bjorn Lomborg, I'd recommend Michael Schellenberger, and I actually, many people might not know my name before this, but I have a history of environmental policy. I wrote a paper that even the UK government took me up on funding nuclear power plants, and I had a piece that came out in Net Zero Watch today. So if you'd like some scrutiny from the environmental sector on why many of the policies are bad and a lot of the apocalyptic predictions are wrong, just suppose Google me as well. Shameless plug.
Some months ago, Carl mentioned offhand that stone is a terrible insulator. It is not, it is wonderful. In the heat of summer, it is cool inside this house, despite how leaky everything but the walls is. Stone is the best insulator.
Isn't insulation meant to keep heat in?
That's true.
So,
but I suppose if you're insulating to try and keep the heat out. Stone, to be fair, it is true. When I've been into buildings that are during summer, which are made of, have walls made of stone, they are always considerably cooler on the interior.
It's great if you live in a tropical climate, but considering we only get two days of heat a year, then I would recommend that you build it.
Well, I mean, yeah, the heat wave does seem to have already gone.
Yeah, John does raise a good point of where, obviously, you have stone ovens and things like that. It stays hot once it is actually heated.
Okay.
Just making me want pizza now, mate.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway. Hi, James Gregg here, author of Faceless. I have a new book coming out. Ship of Fools. This is a military sci-fi survival story. Think Space Marine gets stuck on a refugee ship and has to deal with mutinies and betrayal and nuclear missiles coming at him. Pre-orders are live now on Amazon. If you're interested, you can check out more on my website, jamesgregg.com. Thanks a bunch.
Sounds cool. I actually really enjoyed the Mass Effect novels as well, so it sounds right on my street.
I've never played Mass Effect, nor have I read the novels.
Whoever in this office that has, I really want to do a Politics of Mass Effect video. I actually named my old Xbox gamertag after Mass Effect. I just realized how enthusiastic I look, so that's embarrassing.
You went to proper, like, primary school kid telling everybody about his summer pose right there.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Why don't you wait for me to play all of them? I know they're like 60 hours each, but if I play all of them, then we might be able to do it.
I think it's free on Twitch Prime Gaming right now.
I don't have a gaming PC. I don't have a gaming PC.
Pleb.
I'm so sorry.
I'm not part of the master race. Hurry up.
I'm gonna send you fellas across the pond some cold thoughts with this old mech footage. Here you go.
Does look quite inviting at the moment.
Less so, given that once again the heat wave seems to have already finished.
Yeah, it's died down. I think it's going to thunder about 3 o'clock as well.
Probably that'd be quite nice
to usher in with pathetic fallacy the new Tory candidates.
Yeah, it'd be quite nice actually.
So I don't know about you, but apparently Spotify thinks that it's really good to put a advertisement for man hardening pills or something like that, and then immediately followed by a pro-abortion ad. Really teaching the kids a lot of cool stuff. And yes, this is a motherfucking goose.
I used to have a lake, but not like a...
CSCooper.com.au!
Fuck, I wasn't expecting that.
Waiting for that.
I used to have a river behind my house at the docks, and the reason that I kind of liked environmental stuff is because I used to just walk by my way to uni and the cinema and just feed them every day. And then I got very distraught when, what was it, Untitled Goose Game came out. And the creators on the eve of the 2019 election said you have to support Jeremy Corbyn to buy our game.
God damn it.
Yeah, disappointing.
Yeah, so I don't have a swimming pool. I just have this giant lake 5 minutes walk away from my house. It's so hot living in a forest.
Yep, it's just terrible. And yeah, I live in a forest, so I'm ready for the recession. How about you guys?
Stop mocking us. Stop mocking us with your beautiful scenery. I live in Swindon. I don't have beautiful scenery. There's no beautiful lakes in Swindon 5 minutes from my place.
I was going to say, with wet hair, she looks like Amy Adams as well.
That's a good compliment there as well, actually, Sophie.
So on a similar question to how do I get my giant shield on a plane, how does one get things like spear shafts and tent poles overseas? Well, it turns out most airlines have special allowances for sports equipment, things like skis or track and field javelins, as long as you have them in a hard case. So, I'm once again making my own case, this time out of PVC pipe and rope.
Between that practical skill and the fact that you've got like a prepper's shed on the shelf next to you, you're part of my team for the zombie apocalypse, mate.
That's a good point, yeah. And that's all of the comments, and we've got a few comments to start off with, and I'll read them out, because most of them are being very nice to Connor, and
I didn't pick these, and I don't like compliments.
Thomas Howell says, I like Connor and his erudite, insightful verbiage. I only wish you would deliver it at 1x speed rather than 1x5, which is only for audible, which is true.
Everyone does say I talk fast, I don't really think so, but Harry was mocking me right before the podcast, because I did admit I'm the only person who listens to Ben Shapiro on 2x speed.
I think you're the only person that could understand Ben Shapiro at 2x speed. I would love to see a conversation with you and Ben Shapiro. That would be something.
So would I. Well, Michael Knowles has followed us after we did his book club. If he'd like to invite us on the Daily Wire, it'd be wonderful.
Absolutely. Andrew Narog as well says, really enjoying Connor Tomlinson's commentary. An excellent new hire to the Lotus season. Isn't that just lovely, Connor? Don't sit there
thank
and
you.
Sulk. There
you
go.
I'm not going to sulk. It's just like I don't know how to stay calm. But thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Drew Doomhan says, hey Harry, if you haven't already, check out Iced Earth's Dystopia album. It might be a little closer to what you were hoping to get out of Cradle of Filth. I do need to check out Iced Earth. Thank you for the suggestion. Just don't look too closely into the black pill that is Iced Earth's more recent history. Yes, I am a little bit aware of that because Razor Fist has covered it. I believe one of their members, you can actually see him in photographs in the Capitol building on January 6th.
Was he the one that got denounced by the rest of the band?
Sadly, I believe so, which is always a shame when that happens. But do you want to read through some of your comments?
Yes, for the comments for the Conservative segment. Longshank says, now that Kemi is out of the race, I no longer have to even try and pretend that we as Conservatives have a hope of anyone remotely like us entering number 10 at any point in the near future. Ain't that the truth? We're going to get a neoliberal, pro-immigration, high tax, high spend, pro-college of policing, anti-grammar school, NHS-worshipping, MSM-fearing, WEF-following apparatchik of the cathedral. Tell us what you really think. We're going to be lucky if they can define what a woman is. Absolutely true. But most of the time, they know what a woman is. They're just, it's the Solzhenitsyn quote of, we know they're lying, they know they're lying, they know we know they're lying, and yet they continue to lie. The only thing I will take you up on there is the anti-grammar school part. Grammar schools are not necessarily always better than comprehensives, mainly because of the new academy funding thing. It's a big hotbed of corruption. I actually went to a grammar school. I was one of the few non-rich kids that went there, and the class divide was very apparent. Didn't
they still
always get on
do
my peers.
Grammar schools? I thought we shut them all down.
No, certain areas. Bexley's a real hotbed for them. You do the 11 plus and then you can take your pick of schools. But the problem we had is it got really run down because they had more lax standards. The teaching got worse. Obviously, those that can't do teach, they made some really bad hires. And then one of the teachers started embezzling funds because he bought one of the 2012 Olympics buildings, left it out to rust in the rain, and pocketed the money.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Allegedly. S.H. Silver, the Tories are rotten to the core.
Before we go any further, I forgot that we should probably just point out again that we've got the Premium Live Hangout number 17, Our Cyberpunk Dystopia Part 2, Callum and Carl, which is going live in about an hour at 3:30. Premium members, check that out. And once again, if you've not subscribed yet, you should subscribe because the premium content we put out is pretty fantastic.
It'll be a very good discussion. So the first one was great as well. And you have time to go back and watch the first one if you haven't, since this concludes. S.H. Silver, the Tories are rotten to the core, not because they're trapped in a Blairist paradigm, but because of Thatcherist paradigm that birthed Blairism, just as Reaganism birthed the Clinton Democrats. The neoliberal period, neoliberal hold on politics comes from both ends and has to be done undone from the bottom up. You cannot rely on a top-down change. You need a Steve Bannon to start filling out the local elections with populist candidates. Yes, I agree with Thomas's conclusions on his last critical base theory episode, where neoliberalism is a progenitor of the progressive paradigm, mainly because it focuses on materialism. I don't think Bannon specifically is the best advocate for the sort of family first conservatism.
I mean, for me, neoliberalism, the big problem with it is that it completely advocates for and supports government intervention in the economy to try and stimulate the economy and create better capitalism for everybody. And anybody who, like you yourself or I or Josh, who knows anything about economics, should know that government intervention in the economy will always lead to negative outcomes.
Yeah, it's incompetent at best, sabotage at worst.
Yes.
And it's always utilitarian.
Although, we do need to take a look at Thatcher's influence into the modern day and how she birthed Blairism, because, I mean, it's something that I've been meaning to look into for a while.
That's actually, that would make a pretty solid premium podcast or contemplations. We'll get Josh on it at some point. Comrade Starmer, dodged a bullet with Kemi, only to get hit by an RPG. Fair assessment. Having a husband in Deutsche Bank is pretty spurious grounds to insinuate Kemi is a weftist. Okay, I've heard this criticism. Let's put it this way. If her household income is contingent on her husband pushing the WEF paradigm and keeping his head down, is she going to challenge the hegemony when she's in office? Probably not. But I'll read the rest of your comment. You guys do great work on covering hard truths, but don't you think you're making perfect the enemy of good? No. Good itself is by definition an unshakable objective moral contingency, and undermining good in any way means you're just negotiating the terms of your surrender. Kemi is the one shred of hope I had that Britain could survive. Mate, she wasn't even going to cut taxes. She already said that Rishi Sunak's treasury policy when she was a junior treasury minister was a sensible thing to do. Kemi wasn't our girl. Just because she took Kimberly Crenshaw to task on critical race theory, just because she's versed in essentially an ideology that demonizes her, doesn't mean she's a catch-all term for everything anti-woke. Sorry. Just true. Henry Ashman. The moment Kemi lost, I just clocked out. The Tory system leaves all of the power with the MPs, especially given we're in a situation where the vote will be between two out of three essentially identical candidates. I wish there was an option to vote reopen nominations or none of the above, like I could at uni. Vote ROM was quite a common position for electing officials. I believe, actually, one of the Conservative donors is trying to get Boris on the ballot. They're trying to overturn his resignation by having it so that MPs can vote to return Boris Johnson to power. And I think that's today.
It's fantastic.
Wonderful. Thomas Howell, conspiracy theory, but I wonder if any of the Lotus Eaters have explored the connections between the Baha'i religion and Klaus Schwab. The Bond villain outfit he wears in the pics is their priestly garb.
Oh, is that where those pictures come from?
Well, he got an honorary doctorate. That's where that's from. But I didn't realize that it had a religious connotation because I haven't actually explored that.
Sounds so very interesting. We should take a look into it.
A rabbit hole that we could fall down, definitely. Andrew Narogue. Just want to chime in agreement with Longshanks, the rightful overlord of Scotland, below in saying that Rishi Sunak may be the best choice at this point. What are you smoking? Better the devil you know and all. No. He is going to accelerate us towards a Chinese social credit style currency.
I feel like there's some subterfuge and accelerationism going on in our comments section today.
Yeah, and I'm not comfortable with allowing individual suffering in the interim just so we can get to the post-collapse conservative utopia, because likely we won't be the ones holding the levers of power. We'll be the ones whose boot will be stomping on our face forever. Penny Mordaunt seems a WEF shield to her core. True. And Liz Truss is utterly incompetent. True, but at least she'll cut taxes. When it comes to foreign affairs, she might get us into a war, sure, so I'm not happy about any of them, but I'm going to vote with my pocketbook at least, if I vote at all. At least with Rishi, you'll likely have predictable neoliberal decline. No, you won't. You won't have neoliberal decline. You'll have totalitarian acceleration. Get any thought of him being even remotely neoliberal out your head.
He wants central bank digital currencies, which immediately is just a big no-go on my part, because once again, where will that lead other than... Logically speaking, where will it lead other than social credit scores? I mean, reasonably speaking, if the government has control of how you get your money, how you spend your money, and also can tell you whether or not you're allowed to spend your money on particular goods and services, say goodbye to being able to fund our show, because we're going to get blacklisted from digital currencies being sent our way, which means that you're not going to be able to get all of your information. It's going to restrict the way that you're allowed to go about your day-to-day life. Your money and how you interact with the world using your money, sadly, is one of the greatest things that determines your level of freedom. And that's why we need to get all money out of the government's hand altogether, let alone central bank digital currencies. Anyway, let's go on to a few comments from mine while we've still got a few minutes. Henry Ashman on the squad fakes getting cuffed says, I'm confused. Aren't most of the squad unarmed people of colour, according to their own rhetoric? Shouldn't the police have killed them instead of arresting them? I mean, to be honest, while I do disavow, I think the squad themselves, at least the remaining squad, would have been thrilled if that happened, because then they would have even more to put forward. They would be able to say, look, we are right, we got shot for our beliefs, when instead they're having to fake putting their hands behind their back because they know the Capitol Police are not going to do anything bad to them.
It calls to mind an amazing horrible history song about the suffragettes, where the woman that threw herself under the horse, she said, became a famous martyr, how did memory act? And then the guy just goes, we can't give women votes if they're so stupid, they'll do that.
I mean, it's a good point. We should have listened. We should have listened at the time. Tax fraud says, pretty based, says, okay, we may control the presidency, Congress, pretty much every government agency, most international corporations, and have enough influence to get myself fake arrested. But we're still the resistance, I swear. Yes, exactly. To be fair, to draw the Star Wars analogy again.
Oh, God.
No, because leftists love doing this. But think, they probably don't necessarily see themselves as the rebellion against the Empire. They see themselves as the resistance against the First Order. Except within the Star Wars sequels, which were all terrible, and I hate them, what were the resistance? The resistance was a name given to the leading galaxy-wide governmental organization. They were basically just the army for the galaxy's government.
Yeah, they were parallel economies, basically.
Yeah, so what on earth were they resisting other than what was an outside force trying to take over them? The First Order were the resistance. It just makes no sense, but that's critiques for another time, perhaps. Free Will finally says, squad's acting is top-notch. They should head for Hollywood, where they might get their own superhero franchise. Please don't give them any ideas,
well,
Free Will.
Well, let's hope they don't encounter Harvey Weinstein. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Anyway, I think that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for tuning in. Once again, in an hour's time, 3:30, check out the latest hangout between Carl and Callum talking about our cyberpunk dystopia. Until then, we'll be back again at 1 o'clock tomorrow, British summertime, for the next episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take care and goodbye.